Romney.
Mitt 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 Romney.
Governor Romney.
Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney.
Ronald Reagan.
Mitt Romney.
Five for Romney.
Governor Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney.
Me. Romney.
Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney.
On this vote, the Honorable Mitt Romney of the state of Massachusetts has received 2,061 votes, more than a majority of those votes entitled to be cast at this convention.
All right, we are here. It is the Rebecca Giroir Show. Thanks for tuning in. It is Thursday night and a beautiful day in New Jersey. I usually complain about the weather, but I got nothing to complain about tonight, I'll tell you. It is absolutely beautiful here, but you know what they did today? I'm so amazed. I've lived in the same town, in the same house for a long time. And all this time, we never had, you know, stop signs in our neighborhood or anything like that. Well, recently, just a few weeks ago, actually just over the last few months, they repaved our street for the first time in 45 years. Which is great, and it's beautiful, and then now all of a sudden they're putting in these lane lines and the white stop lines at the end of the street. I swear to God, if they put in stop signs, I'm going to be furious. I mean, we've had these roads for 45 years. We never had a problem. I don't recall ever seeing an accident, in at least in this area. And now they're going to go, if they put in stop signs, I swear to God,
They've got a little grant money they're using, probably.
I guess so. I don't know. It's so weird because they paved my street, but the other streets, they paved just far enough so that they could paint in crosswalks and these lines. And that's it. And then the rest of it is all still kind of messed up. So it's kind of weird. Hopefully they'll be doing the whole neighborhood at some point. But here we are. It's already the end of August. Can you believe that? The end of frickin' August. And they've only gotten our street done. So I assume that whatever streets they do next time around will be next year. But of course, you know, we live in the land of Chris Christie where you never know. Funding suddenly disappears without notice and things like that. So, hey, how you doing? I am so glad to be back on the air this week. We've got Dr. Dana Beyer at the bottom of the hour. And we'll be talking Obama. She is one of the leaders of Trans for United for Obama. Of course, that's an organization. As far as I know, they're mainly on Facebook at this point. And basically what it is it's trans people who are getting together to support Barack Obama for president, for re-election. And as you know, if you listen to this show, I got a few things to say about that. I'm not entirely happy with Obama. I'm not entirely unhappy with Obama. But I've got a lot of issues. And so we're going to get into those. We're also going to get into the positive stuff. What has he done for us? Why should we vote for this guy? Okay, and I'll tell you the truth. I've said this a number of times. Just saying, well, you know, Romney and Ryan, they'll be awful, terrible, horrible, and that'll be it. And you know, so you got to vote for Obama because they're not Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Well, I'm sorry, but that's not enough for me. Okay, just like it's not good enough when the Republicans say, you know, we're against this and against that, and we don't support this and we don't support that. You got to ask somebody. Well, what are you for? What are you going to do? What are you supporting? So I think it's fair to turn that question around and focus it on Barack Obama as well. He's running for president. He's had 4 years. He made certain promises. A few of them he kept, but a lot of them he didn't. And so we're going to get into that with Dr. Beyer, with Dana, coming up at the bottom of the hour. In the meantime, though, while we're talking, I found this online today, and I wanted to share it with you because I found this unbelievable. Now, of course, as you know, Mr. Mike lives in the land of Arizona.
Oh God, don't remind me.
The state governed by the notorious Jan Brewer, who made such an unbelievable screw up. Talk about these things that politicians wish they could take back.
Staying permanently drunk helps my coping here in Arizona.
I would
think so.
When I saw this, I wrote to Mike today. I said this is must play. So Mike, why don't you run that little clip of Governor Jan Brewer last night at the RNC?
Our pride and joy.
If you've had conversations with Governor Romney about securing your border, immigration in general, if you have, what has he told you? What has he promised you? What have you asked for?
Well, I believe that Governor Romney understands the issue. Certainly, being a former governor, he understands states' rights. He understands that as governors, we have to govern. And I know that if President Obama is elected in November, which I hope that he is, that he will be able to come together with all of us and come up with a solution. And I believe he will secure our borders. And therefore, we can resolve all those other issues as a simple matter.
And what was really funny was, you know, Ron Mott, who was the interviewer for NBC, who was doing that interview, obviously let her just go. And, and I'm listening to this thing, and I'm like, I can't believe that she said it. Because let's be honest, okay? Reality check here. She does not support President Obama. We all know it, okay? She screwed up, and... You know, but the reality here's the funny part, though. If the Democrats were like the Republicans in their ads, they should take that clip of Jan Brewer and put it in their latest ad. You know, I mean, it's like when they took that Obama clip from the ad that said, you know, if we talk about the economy, we lose.
Yeah.
And that was actually a clip from a statement that was much longer where he was talking about the opposition. He was talking about the Republicans. And they turned it into that he was making the statement. That's the way they cut it. So if Democrats want to use the same kind of fake informational techniques as the Republicans, as like, you know, if you watch the Paul Ryan speech last night, oh my God. You know, I may actually have to like take a break from re-listening to the show tonight. I usually when the show's over, of course, Mr. Mike always replays the show 5 minutes after we go off the air live. Mm-hmm. And I sit back and I listen to the show. But tonight, Mitt Romney is addressing the RNC. Have to at least take a small break from re-listening to the show and catch that part on when Mr. Mike posts a podcast, which you should all look out for. Because I have to see what Mitt Romney is going to say tonight at the RNC. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's funny. The more that you get to know these people, the less you think of them. And it's not just about gay rights, and it's not just about trans rights, and it's not just about civil rights. It's everything. It's about women's reproductive stuff. It's about the difference, the gap between rich and poor. It's about the destruction of the middle class. It's about all these things. You know, and Paul Ryan, unbelievable. I mean, the guy just lied. Just flat out lied his ass off last night. I mean, he goes out and he tries to blame Barack Obama for the closing of a Janesville, Wisconsin plant. Now, Janesville, Wisconsin is where Paul Ryan is from. It's where he is a congressman. It's his district. It's his hometown. And he tried to blame Barack Obama because this plant closed. Except this plant closed in 2008. Barack Obama was not president yet. So they're trying to basically retroactively blame him for something that happened before he was president. But, you know, I mean, this should surprise no one because let's be honest, okay? What have they been trying to do? They've been trying to hang the Bush economy around his neck for his entire term in office. trying to blame Barack Obama for the pit that George Bush dug with two unfunded wars, with multi-trillion-dollar, well, I don't know about multi-trillion, but multi-billion-dollar tax breaks for the wealthy. I mean, you know, and they're trying to hang this around Barack Obama, which is a joke. And what's funny is, well, maybe it's not funny. Maybe it's encouraging. I'm not sure. But what's interesting is that I think, and I hope, I shouldn't say I think, because I don't have any facts to back this up, honestly. Just my own feeling from what I'm reading on the internet, from what I see on television, from what I talk to people. My feeling is that people are wising up to this stuff. You know, you can't just go and say it's Obama's fault anymore. Because guess what? We have this thing called the internet now. People can check these things. They can fact check you in about 3 seconds. And they do. And so I think what's happening is, you know, when politicians, and I'm not going to say Republicans or Democrats because they all do it. We know this. They all lie. It's what they do. Okay? But it used to be when a politician would throw bullshit out there, you either trusted that he was telling the truth or you didn't. You had no way to really go and back it up, and to go back through old files newspapers and video catalogs of news reports and things. You had no way to do that. Now you do. Now we have YouTube. Now we've got Google. If you're not sure, you can check it out for yourself and read those articles. You can watch those videos. You can get it yourself. You don't need NBC or Fox News or CBS or CNN to spoon feed you this stuff anymore. And that's important. And I think it makes a difference. I think people are starting to understand that you can't just accept as fact what people are telling you. And, you know, I'm intentionally avoiding talking about Barack Obama because he is, in my opinion, has certainly swum in those waters. He made a lot of promises that he hasn't kept, but I'm intentionally staying off of that because we're going to get into that with Dana Byer. And I'm not, I should tell people right off the bat, I'm not looking to bash Barack Obama here. I am a Obama supporter. I intend to vote for him in November. But I also have my eyes open. And I'm not going to just say, oh, Obama, he's wonderful, he's great, and let's all rah-rah and rally around the Obama campaign. Because you know what that gets you? That gets you bupkis. That gets you ignored. That gets you taken for granted. And I think we've had enough of that, don't you? I know I do. I'm sick of having my vote taken for granted. And you should be too. And here's the thing. I will never, on this show, in my writing, or anywhere else, tell you, don't vote for Barack Obama because fill in the blank. I'm not going to tell you that. But I certainly will tell you, push him. Call him out. Say, hey, you know, you promised us this. Where, you know, when is it our turn? I think that's an important, I think that's an important thing. But anyway, okay, let's get off of Obama. I don't want to spend too much time talking about that because, well, frankly, we're going to get into it a little bit later with Dr. Byer. So let's see here. Oh, here's an interesting thing. A couple of weeks ago, I don't remember, last week or a week before, we talked about a breastfeeding organization called La Leche in Canada. And they were basically banned a breastfeeding trans man from being a leader in that organization because he's a guy. Well, we've got an update on that. And apparently this breastfeeding organization – is going to consider allowing a trans leader. I'll give you a little bit on this. La Leche League is an international nonprofit dedicated to supporting women who breastfeed. Recently, it opened its doors to Trevor McDonald, a Canadian transgender man who had retained his female reproductive organs and wanted to nurse his child. Despite the challenge of having little breast tissue, he successfully breastfed his son, thanks in part to the support he got from La Leche League. However, when he tried to give back and support the organization's leader, they were not suddenly so welcoming, telling him that only women could hold leadership positions. But according, thanks to people who have advocated for him, who rallied around Trevor McDonald, the organization has said it will revisit the policy. It says, now this is writing for, I guess, their press release here. I'm quoting here. Our organization is addressing and carefully considering a unique matter raised when a transgender individual who has self-identified as a father approached La Leche League Canada with a request to be considered for accreditation as a La Leche League leader. A La Leche League leader is a volunteer with specialized knowledge and training in providing mother-to-mother breastfeeding support. To our knowledge, this topic has never arisen in the 56-year history of our organization. It is important that La Leche League International and its community thoughtfully consider the issues that are being raised and carefully examine its policies applicable to this matter. We are committed to considering all points of view. To that end, La Leche League International Board of Directors will carefully review all facts and implications of this unprecedented subject. Our top priority, today and always, is to create policies and take action that support our community of volunteers, members, and supporters. We look forward to sharing the details about our review process and its outcome in due course. And I guess that's the end of the PR statement there. But the article continues. It says the subject may be unprecedented, and it probably is. I mean, you know, trans men openly giving birth and breastfeeding and things like that. Yeah, it's a relatively new topic. And if you remember, we were discussing this with Ethan St. Pierre last week, and he was not too supportive, actually. He said that he didn't feel that men should be trying to worm their way into women's places, just as women shouldn't be trying to worm their way into men's places. And I have to agree with him as far as that goes. But, of course, then you have to determine, is this truly a women's place, or is it a breastfeeder's place? And in light of female-to-male transgender fathers, does that determination, does that biodeterminist kind of attitude have to be revisited? Clearly, the organization feels it does. At least it has to be examined, re-examined, and a decision has to be made. So kudos for them on that. Now, the article continues a little bit here. I'll read a little bit more. The subject may be unprecedented, and stories like Trevor McDonald's may be few, but how society treats transgender patients, transgender parents, is an important question to address. Unfortunately, the laws in many states require that people who are transgender undergo complete sexual reassignment surgery if they wish to have their gender recognized under law, for which they pay the price of fertility. Many people who are trans find the identity coherence they need without completing such surgeries, but that makes their gender no less authentic. I'll agree with that completely. The idea of a pregnant or breastfeeding man may still be a cultural oddity, but in many ways it represents the separation of gender identity without the consequence of sterility. All trans people deserve the same right to raise a family and should be supported, encouraged, and included in the role of parenting as any other parent would be. I agree with that, but I do have a question. And this is not a dig, this is not an attack, this is not an anything, but it is a question that I think that the La Leche League has to answer, and I think other organizations of similar kind of situations have to answer. And my question surrounds the last part of the statement. Included in the role of parenting as any other parent would be. Well, the vast majority of other parents are the women are the ones who breastfeed, and the men are the ones who drive their wives to the group and sit there and wait while they do what they do. I mean, that's how any other parent would be treated. So the question really is, do you redefine what a parent is? Let's be honest. If you're going for a biodeterminist, a biological role, the mother is the one who gives birth and breastfeeds the child. That is the biological view. And, of course, previous to now, that has been the universal view because, generally speaking, I think men are capable of breastfeeding, theoretically, but it's extraordinarily rare that you ever hear of it happening. You know, so the real question here is, should the definitions change? Personally, I think they should. I think they should. I think they have to over time. Now, the question is should they change this minute? I would like to see it. I think it's great. I think cases, situations like this are exactly what are required in order to do exactly what we're seeing here. For organizations that base their rules on biodeterminist views, to revisit those and say, well, wait a minute, it's not so easy anymore. And I think that goes, that you flip it around, and it's the same thing when you're talking about women. I mean, you know, look at how, you know, a woman, you know, you could argue, for example, that a, and I'm just using this as an example, that a woman who is an auto mechanic is in a male-dominated industry. And that's probably true. But is she any less of a woman? Should she be shunned? Should she be excluded from, say, an organization that works on cars because she happens to be a woman and all the other members are men? Should she, you know, if she likes football, should she be excluded from a mostly male fan base? I mean, you know, there are a lot of different situations, okay? And similarly, you know, we've had a lot of situations, especially historically, where trans women have been excluded from places and situations and clubs where, they've been determined not to be real women. I was once with a friend, a trans friend, so we went to a lesbian club in New York. This was a little dive club. I don't even remember the name. It was downtown. We were in there. And we went in. It was a lesbian club. It was obviously a lesbian club. We hadn't planned on going there. It was kind of like we were walking through the area talking, and we went in. We were looking for a place to find a drink. And we just happened to walk past this place, and we saw all these women walking in, and we said, oh, look, lesbian club. Oh, let's go. You know, let's go. I mean, that was really all it was. We weren't sitting there saying, oh, we're trans women. Let's go and put ourselves into women's space. It was just, let's go have a drink. So we walk in. It was, you know, just women, you know, music playing, women dancing with each other, all kinds, butch, dyke, lipstick, all, you know, the whole diversity. I think I spotted a couple of trans men there, but could have just been stone cold dykes. I'm not sure. Kind of hard to tell sometimes, you know, just by looking at somebody, you know. But anyway, so we're hanging out there, and we're talking, and we're obviously trans women, okay? There was no, I mean, my friend was 6'2", okay? There was no doubt that we were trans women. And what happened was eventually these two butch dykes came up to us, like, aren't you in the wrong place? Like, I'm sorry. Well, you know, this is a lesbian club. Yeah, and your point is? Well, you're one of those, right? Like, one of what? People with red hair? That's what I said. I figured, well, what have I got to lose at this point? No, you know what I mean. I think we want you to leave now. And I said, but I haven't finished my drink. And my friend is like, looks, and she's, like I say, substantially taller than I am. And She looks down. It's like, she hasn't finished her drink. Neither have I. Well, we think you should leave now. And then at that point, three other Butch Dykes get up and start standing around. So now we're surrounded by five Butch Dykes, all who are standing there with their arms crossed in front of us, circling us at the bar. At which point, my friend and I looked at each other and went, you ready? Yeah, let's get out of here. So we kind of push out of the semicircle that these women had trapped us in, and we walk towards the door. We walk out the door. They follow us out. As we're walking towards the, like, there's, I'm trying to think of a way to, there was kind of like a patio area, and then it led out to the sidewalk. As we're walking through this patio area, one of the women takes a swing at me, hits me, grazes me in the side of the head. Except I turned at the last minute, so it grazed off of me and caught my friend halfway in the chest. Not a good move, okay? She was not happy. And so basically what happened was as I'm getting ready and as she's getting ready for a fight, as I'm getting ready for a fight, the bartender comes out and says to apparently these butch women, leave them alone or I'm calling the cops. And we were already, bear in mind, we were already out the door on the sidewalk, walking away from the club. And like, leave them alone or I'm calling the cops. At that point, they turned away and walked back into the bar, and we went on our way. But that's what happened. You know, I mean, given to understand that sort of thing is not unusual. Now, I know we happen to have Dana Byer on the line, but we are going to take a quick break, just long enough for me to run to the little girl's room and for Mr. Mike to play a little funny little spot that we are going to run. And then we will be right back with Dr. Dana Byer. We'll catch you in a 2 seconds.
When I created Tea Party Harmony to help you find your perfect right-wing mate, I didn't stop there. Now, just in time for the convention, I've created a mobile app that helps you find that one person who thinks just like you. Introducing TDAR.
There I was at the convention waiting to see Birther of a Nation, and my TDAR alert went off.
Whenever you get close to someone as sociopathic and misinformed as you are, the patented TDAR alert tone lets you know. I just turned around and there she was.
You were so cute.
It's TDAR. Download it and take it everywhere. Choose the tone you like.
It's much more fun when you have it on vibrate.
Don't I know it?
I don't know how I ever met true patriots before.
Get TDAR today.
I still don't like taxes.
And I'm still afraid of brown people.
Yeah.
From the people who brought you Tea Party Harmony, it's TDAR.
May not be compatible with anything after 1962.
President Obama is the kind of politician who puts promises on the record and then calls that the record. But we are 4 years into this presidency. The issue is not the economy that Barack Obama inherited, not the economy that he envisions, but this economy that we are living. College graduates should not have to live out their 20s in their childhood bedrooms, staring up at fading Obama posters and wondering when they can move out and get going with life. Everyone who feels stuck in the Obama economy is right to focus on the here and now. And I hope you understand this too. If you're feeling left out or passed by, you have not failed. Your leaders have failed you.
Bonanza, Bonanza,
Bonanza. Indeed. All right. Hey, everybody. We are back. It is the Rebecca Juro Show. Thanks for sticking around. And we have got on the line Dr. Dana Beyer. Hey, Dana, how you doing?
Good. Hi, Becky. Good to be back.
And of course, you are one of, correct me if I'm wrong here, you are one of the leaders of Trans for Obama. Is that right? Okay. And we should tell, first of all, we should tell people what Trans for Obama is. It's an organization, basically, I'm fill in the blanks here. Basically, the organization's mission is to get trans people on board supporting Barack Obama's reelection.
Correct. And it's Trans United for Obama. So if anybody wants to Google this, that's all you have to do. Trans United for Obama, F-O-R. And it's... It will give you links for campaign donations. We'll help you get set up with grassroots organizing, transunitedforobama.org. And it's the first time our any group within our community has set up a vehicle for our community alone. Now, if you make a contribution through this, it then gets registered as trans-related. You don't have to be trans to contribute through TU4O, but it... You know, we welcome everybody, and then it also then it goes into the merging with other streams from the LGB community, and it becomes bundled as a total LGBT contribution for the president, because generally that's how it's been registered. We have never had our own funding path before, so we're not really focusing on the money per se. We don't have a money goal. We just want to get as many people involved through this means in order to show the president that we're very grateful for everything that he's done. We've got his back. We're going to do what we can to get him reelected, and we're looking forward to a second term.
I used to co-chair an organization back in 2004 called Out for Dean, as in Howard Dean, Out for Dean Transgender. That was an organization, basically similar kind of mission. Our mission was to promote Howard Dean to our constituency, and later on when he left the race, it became Out for Democracy Transgender. And what was interesting was, and I want to tell this because it kind of leads into my first question, the way that that organization was formed was there was originally it was a large group of LGBT people all for Out for Democracy, and there was certain activists, most notably a guy who's well known from the Stonewall days. His name is Jim Farratt. Jim Farratt voiced the opinion publicly that transgender people were irrelevant to politics, and that we should be booted out, and that the organization should be focusing solely on gay and lesbian issues. Although in his mind, I don't think he realized that like women are gay too. I think he was only focused on gay men.
Well, he comes back from, as you mentioned, actually from Stonewall and the Gay Activist Alliance in New York, which was almost completely gay male for many, many years. It took the AIDS epidemic to thin out the numbers of gay men out there and to bring women into the movement. So there was a huge gender issue within the gay rights movement back in the 70s. It wasn't just a trans issue. There was also a women's issue. And Jim Farratt has been hostile towards us for 40 years now. That's not news. He said worse things than we should just be kicked out of the movement.
Right. Well, what happened was this basically triggered off a minor civil war within the organization. And the end result of that minor civil war was the creation of Out for Democracy Transgender, which was our own group that said, you know, we're going to support Howard Dean. And one of the things that we were able to do was we were able to go to the campaign, to the Howard Dean campaign, and say, hey, is Governor Dean on board with a transgender inclusive agenda? And they responded, and he came out himself in favor of that, the first major presidential candidate ever to do that, I might add. And so we were able then, in turn, to go back to our constituents as trans people and say, vote for this guy, support this guy, because he's standing up for you. And the problem that I think a lot of us are having with Barack Obama is, you know, he says all the right things. You know, he comes out, he mentions the right things, and then
Nothing.
I mean, this is a guy.
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean? And then nothing. Oh, first of all, well, I know Governor Dean. I sat down and met with the governor, and we're both physicians.
Well, wait, we were late on this issue,
and he's been pro-trans, as you say, for a very long time.
But pro-trans is not the same as you know. I mean, it's kind of like Dana. It's kind of like the way he said, "I personally don't have a problem with gay marriage," but he never said in that statement that he made supporting gay marriage. Never once did he say, "And I'm going to help you attain that goal." Okay. On the other hand, President Obama, as early as 2007, a full year before he was elected president, said, "I support the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and I will use the weight of my administration to fight for this." And one of the things that I've certainly had an issue with, and I talk about on the show all the time, is that we haven't seen that. We haven't seen him use the weight of his administration to fight for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, as he promised.
It's much more complicated than that, as you know, and is not quite as important
but the reality is he didn't have a problem coming out for gay marriage, and considering that that's banned in 31 states, Dana, I can't believe that workplace rights for LGBT people is more controversial than that.
Why aren't we seeing him talk about this? Becky, please. ENDA is a congressional issue. Now, granted, the president has the bully pulpit. He's got his administration people who work on these issues, who've worked on the issues which I listed in my op-ed in the Blade today. The administration, doing what the administration can do, has done great work. It is not Barack Obama's fault that the LGBT community decided, rather than going down the list that was presented, that was decided upon before the election, that we would do hate crimes first, ENDA second, repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell third, push for DOMA fourth as the four basic pillars of our campaign going forward under a Democratic president with a Democratic Congress. He is not the one who shifted that. That's not on him. As to the best of my knowledge, and I wasn't intimately involved with this, and I'm just feeding you material that I've gleaned now for years, this was a decision made between the gay community and Congress, and the president then simply acquiesced into it because, as far as he was concerned, it didn't really matter whether we went after repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell first or we work for ENDA.
And that's the problem right there. He didn't care. He was willing to just say, okay, let's put the rights of all those LGBT people on the shelf, and we'll go for the easy stuff.
Repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell was not easy stuff anyway, and we only got it done 5 minutes to midnight on a Hail Mary pass. So that wasn't easy. That's no model for getting legislation passed. But it's not, I don't understand why people think that the President of the United States would truly have a moral claim to choosing ENDA versus repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell or some other issue. I'm not at all concerned that he hasn't prioritized us when it comes to those choices. The fact of the matter is he has prioritized us vis-a-vis the gay community on everything that he could do. The difference is
Wait a minute now. What about the executive order that would protect federal workers at federal contractors?
We are covered under Executive Order 11246, promulgated by President Johnson in 1965. We do not need President Obama's executive order. The gay community needs it, the gender-conforming gay community, to be specific. They need it. They haven't gotten it. Now, do I agree that this should be an easy thing to do? Yes, I do. And I have been working with Freedom to Work and other groups to try to get the administration to do it. But for reasons of this presidential campaign, they are a little bit wary about doing anything that might be construed as anti-business. Do I think they should be worried?
And that's
do
the
I
problem.
Do I think that a president
right
who
there.
Came out for marriage equality should be worried about that? No, I don't, but I'm not one of his campaign
but
advisors.
But you see, that's
so
the problem, Dana. A lot of people feel, you know what? My civil rights as an American citizen are more important than the convenience of big business. And if Barack Obama is willing to make a political calculation that we're not, that it's okay to throw our rights under the bus to, to pander
right.
to big business, well, then I think that
as trans people who have
been denied these rights, we have not only a right but an obligation to speak out and call it out. Otherwise, what we
get is New York, where gays have
marriage rights, and we have nothing. That's what we get.
What do you talk? Wait a minute. What do you mean we have nothing?
In New York, we have nothing. You could still, except in New York City and a handful of municipalities, gay people have the right to marry. They have full protections in the workplace, and you can still throw a trans person out of their home just for being trans. You can still hire them or refuse to hire them just for being trans.
No, you cannot.
All the celebrities and all the money and all the politicians have gone away. Trans people in New York are left to fend for themselves.
Becky, you are absolutely wrong.
That's what you get when you don't speak
out.
No, you're wrong. That's what Democrats do.
You know, I don't know what to say. You're going to speak. You know, you're going to go down one track, and I'm going to go down the other. You invited me on here to talk about what the reality is.
That's my problem. I'm not saying we should not vote and support Barack Obama.
Becky, I didn't say that. I'm not saying that.
I said that at the top of the show.
In the United States, trans people are covered in employment. That includes Mississippi, not just New York, okay? That's the reality today on August 30th, 2012. That's the reality. Now, the absolute reality is that trans federal employees are absolutely covered. There is no loophole, no way out on that for anyone. Trans employees who work for federal contractors, anyone who has a federal contract worth over $10,000 a year, are completely covered. No grounds for appeal for the government. Every other American is now covered under Title VII. Has that ruling been given full deference by the courts yet? No, the courts have not gotten to it.
That's what I'm saying. We haven't seen how the courts are going to treat this.
I'm less willing than you are to just hang my hat on that because the courts have been moving in a very positive manner. You can ask any of our LGBT legal experts on this. In the past 4 or 5 years, most of the upper court rulings have been extremely positive. We are getting near the point where gender-conforming gay people are going to be covered under Title VII. This is a revolution. And to say you're not going to hang your hat on it is, number one, very negative, and I wouldn't advise anybody have a negative attitude. But the fact of the matter is that doesn't matter now, because most employers are simply going to accept the fact that trans people and gender nonconforming people in general, and that's far more than there are trans people, are covered under Title VII. It is now a commonsensical understanding of what that law states. This has been a revolution, and this revolution did come about because Barack Obama nominated Chi Feldblum to the EEOC and worked her confirmation. She has made all the difference.
I agree with you, that is a positive that I do want to make note of, is that Obama has done stuff like that. Amanda Simpson is another example.
Amanda Simpson is a wonderful woman, and she's my role model, but Amanda is simply a trans federal employee. Amanda's appointment has no impact on every trans American. EEOC decision has an impact on every trans American. Similarly, the other main issue for trans people, and you're right. I mean, our civil rights, our basic civil rights, are far more important to us than marriage equality. So we're not going to argue about that. The other main issue for trans people, besides employment, is access to health care. And as of today, as of 2 weeks ago, officially, formally, every trans American is entitled to access to health care, full transgender health care, with any physician, health practitioner, hospital that receives federal funds or is part of the federal health care system. That is huge. That's also in all 50 states. That includes Mississippi or Montana, Alabama or Arkansas, everywhere. Even mm-hmm. the task force now has a map up which shows every state in which trans Americans are entitled to health care access under the law. And the entire map is pink.
Okay, and here's another here's another issue that I wanted to bring up. And the only reason I bring this up is because I just saw a very long video yesterday on this. So this is clearly starting to become an issue. And that is the issue of transgender people serving in the military. This is something that is not a law. This is something that President Obama, as commander-in-chief, could do away with his signature.
No, he couldn't.
10 other
allies around
the world have already done this.
No.
No?
He cannot. The president cannot do it away with his signature. I attended the Lavender Law Conference this past weekend because I've been getting involved in this.
Yeah, that's the video that I saw online.
Right.
The Lavender Law.
And, and this is an issue which, fortunately for us, our gay friends are picking up on this. So the new OutServe SLDN organization is going to be involved with this. The Federal GLOW people are involved with it. Monica Helms, you know, TVA is involved with this. NCDE will be involved with this. I'm doing work with this. This is the next step, but this is not something like, a couple of years ago, several gay activists suggested to the president that he just issue an executive order to sort of stop loss order for Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He could have done that, and he chose not to do it. He went a different route. He cannot do that in the military. There is the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which is not our justice system. It is its own animal. And
hang on a second, though. Harry Truman integrated the armed forces with his signature. Why can't Barack Obama integrate trans people into the military the same way?
This is not the same thing. This is a medical regulation, and we have to work through the system in order to get these Corporal Clinger era regulations removed. In the meantime, keep in mind, there are trans people serving in the military whose safety is at issue. And at one of the panels at the Lavender Law Conference, one of the plenary sessions was trans in the military. It was remakable how many of their sessions dealt with trans issues.
I saw a couple of people like really almost break down on stage as they were speaking.
Yes, no, Calpurnia and Denise and Paula, they were all wonderful. They told great stories, and the attorney there was very, very practically minded. And she said, this is all great, but I have clients, and I'm interested in protecting their safety. And Calpurnia, who's been a friend of mine for over a decade, made a very astute point. And she said, I will be honest with you, speaking to this crowd. She said, we in the trans community have yet to decide what it is we want as far as, quote-unquote, trans in the military goes. Do we want, I think she said this, it may have been Denise, do we want to have troops marching around, you know, in floral outfits and stuff, you know, carrying their bayonets. No, she was exaggerating, of course. But no, what do we want? Do we want the right for a trans person to transition on active duty? Or do we want a trans person to be able to transition on reserve duty? Do we want people who've transitioned before they've entered the military to simply be accepted and to have their gender history be made irrelevant? Or do we want more than that? We as a community haven't decided this.
But couldn't we at least start with not being automatically disqualified for service simply based on our transgender status, exclusive of anything else?
Comes down to the medical regulations, now that gender identity in and of itself is not disordered, we are no longer a mental illness, this is how, that's our wedge issue into changing the medical regulations. But this is a completely different system, one with which I have no familiarity, and most civilian attorneys don't either. So this is not something we can just sort of parachute in and get done the way we would normally do it. Remember, keep in mind, President Clinton pushed Don't Ask, Don't Tell in 1993. Congress passed it in 1993, and it took them 18 years to repeal it. And that was with lots of gay service people and lots of gay lawyers who knew the military justice system working from within. It took them a long time. I don't expect this is going to take us anywhere near that long, but this is a separate, unique process that we have to go through, and we have to be respectful of the fact that the Department of Defense runs under its own rules and regulations. We can't simply say, make it happen. There's no magic wand for this. But we have allies now who are working with us to make this happen. I think that's great. I mean, we're getting more support now from our gay colleagues and straight allies than I ever imagined possible.
All right, let's broaden it out a little bit. One of the things that I've been,
oh, that's been pretty
talking
cool.
about, I got into an argument with somebody on the Huffington Post, and I wanted to bring this out and see get your take on it. One of the things that really kind of irked me about the last election, the last presidential election, was we had, and now, of course, you were saying, as rightly so, that ENDA is mainly about Congress, although I do think President Obama could certainly do more as far as voicing his opinion. But let's put that aside for a second. Back in 2008, Barney Frank said, in essence, and I'm paraphrasing, get us 15 new members, or Democratic members of the House, and we will get ENDA passed. Needless to say, they got 22, plus full control of the federal government, and we didn't even get a vote. Now, we've got Nancy Pelosi saying, get us 25 members of the House, of Democratic members, and we'll get ENDA passed. And I have to ask myself, where does this stop? I mean, are we going to be sitting here 4 years from now with some other Democrats saying, get us 50 members? It seems like, they're playing this shell game with us, with our civil rights. And you have to reach a point where you're saying, how am I helping myself by voting for people who behave like this?
I don't see where the problem is. We don't have control of the House. The House is controlled by lunatics.
But we
now,
did.
If there were enough libertarian lunatics in the House, we might actually be able to do it, because true libertarians believe in civil rights. And
but come
they,
on,
they would
we had a full
that.
2 years with the 111th
Oh,
Congress.
I don't argue with that. I was very disappointed, as many other trans people were, that ENDA was shunted aside for repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. My gut feeling is that was done because the decision was made in the community, not in the White House, that it would be easier to accomplish this gay thing rather than a gay plus trans thing. I'm not arguing that, but that's something that's above my pay grade, and that's, I don't know, we can complain about that.
That's where I take issue.
Well, that's take issue. Go ahead.
If we are going to organize as a trans community, shouldn't we be able to say to the DNC, to the Obama campaign, to the campaigns of House and Senate Democrats, yes, we will support you. Yes, we will be behind you. But we need you to be behind us when we need you.
No,
it
we can
can't all
say
be
that.
A one-way street.
Right. And that's the way it should be, and that's the way politics gets done.
But that hasn't been the way that it is, and that's the problem.
Well, but no, the problem is, I sense the problem is, all you're doing here is focusing on ENDA. And, yes, Congress failed to get it done in 2009 and 2010. That's very unfortunate. I'm very unhappy about that. Most of the trans activists I know are unhappy about that. But it's not a bad consolation prize to be covered under Title VII. It's actually far more effective than ENDA would be. So, ENDA, remember, ENDA is only about employment. ENDA doesn't cover housing, although some of the federal regulations now cover housing, and it doesn't cover public accommodations, but women aren't covered under sex isn't covered under public accommodations either. These are complicated issues. We haven't gotten everything, but we've gotten a huge number of things. We've gotten the VA. We've gotten HHS. We've gotten Social Security. We've got the Department of State that basically broke through, did far more. You mentioned New York. It was a few years ago when the trans activists in New York were trying to get Bloomberg to revisit what the requirements were for changing one's ID, one's birth certificate, to not include surgery. And they failed, right?
Well, they
but
have not
State
failed.
Department
There's
doesn't care.
There
the
are
State
two
Department doesn't
cases.
Care now. Isn't that a huge bit of progress? We're not Argentina. I admit that. Argentina is now, that's the high bar. That's what we're all pushing for. We're not Argentina, but the State Department, Hillary Clinton saying, gay rights are human rights and stuff. Maybe the language could have been a little bit better, but the State Department is fully inclusive in all its actions around the globe. I've seen that in action. I know that to be the case. And so now you don't need surgery for a passport.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, there's no doubt that, and I see this thrown back at me all the time. In fact, most recently by Chaz Bono on Twitter, as a matter of fact, that Obama has done more for us than any other president. And I agree with that. But, you know, yeah. I mean, who do we have to compare it to? George Bush?
No, that's not the issue.
I mean, Bill Clinton, the guy who signed Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the Defense of Marriage Act? That's what we're comparing?
There's no comparison.
Saying Obama did more for us than any other president is like saying he's not trying to kill you. I mean, silly.
No, come on. Why, Becky, why are you so negative? I mean,
Because when you hear this stuff, you want to be honest with me. If you can't get end of pass, don't just clam up and have your press secretary say we have no information on that. Come to us and say, hey, we're having a problem here. Be honest with us. And that's what we're not getting from the Democratic Party.
Yes, I know. We're not getting it. And our gay allies didn't give it to us. And that whole thing was a mess. And I agree with that. But that's old. That's 2 years old. At this point, we have Senator Harkin saying to all of us, to the media in the room at the Senate end of hearing, this is old. Let's get this done. This is not a difficult thing to do.
Right.
And
but
as
then where's
each
the
day
vote?
Passes,
where's the vote?
It becomes less difficult.
That's what I'm saying. They're great at talking, but they stink at doing. That's the problem. This is true. Where's the vote?
Have you studied American history? When has Congress ever been better at doing that stuff?
Where is the vote on the Employment Non-Discrimination Act in the Senate? Harry Reid could call for one today.
Why are you fixated on that?
Because it's a sign. It's showing us that you're more than just talk. One of the reasons why we were so successful with Out for Dean, that the Kerry campaign reached out to us to try and get our community on board for John Kerry. The reason we were so successful is because Howard Dean was willing to come out and say, I support your civil rights, and here's how. Here's what I'm in favor of, and I will campaign on it publicly. I will say the words. Okay? That's what got people supporting him. That's what got people as members of Out for Dean Transgender. Okay? And that's what we're not seeing from President Obama and the DNC. If anything, they backed away from where they were in 2008.
The president has said transgender far, far more times than Governor Dean ever did. Now, I told you,
only
I know
he's
Governor
been in office
Dean.
Longer.
I like Governor Dean. He was the first person at that level, certainly the first presidential candidate to ever come out and say that. He was sincere about it. When I talked to him about it, he said, Dana, why would there be an issue with this? This is a medical condition. That's the end of it. We treat medical conditions a certain way. You and I know this. This should not be an issue. I love that when he said that. Nobody else was willing to say that. He is sui generis. No question. He's a unique individual. Barack Obama is president of the United States. He has repeatedly, when he's gone out to talk to LGBT groups, talked about our community. And as far as even comparing us to the gay community, which I did in the op-ed today, I said, we started from a much lower level because we had nothing. Bill Clinton gave us nothing. No question about it, but that was 20 years ago, right? So we started from a lower level, but we've accomplished a huge amount, much of which I've already told you. And the Affordable Care Act, which is going to go into effect in 2014, will be huge. There will be new Medicare regulations. These are all transformational, and you're going to, you know, if you choose to be unhappy and to fixate on congressional inaction and ENDA, you're going to miss everything that should be making you feel extremely
happy. I have to disagree with you there, Dana, because I don't think it's the same thing as being unhappy with saying, you know what, we deserve more. We deserve better. That's not the same thing as saying, I don't like this guy.
I don't think we deserve better. I mean, I want more in the next term. There's more to be done. There's no question. I mean, I would like to see transsexualism removed from the ADA.
Yeah. Hey, you know, listen, like Dana, we're going to take a quick break. Can you stick around? We got plenty more to talk about.
Yeah, there's plenty of stuff that needs to be done. There's no question. And most importantly, and we haven't talked about it at all, is the lived reality of many trans people, which is a whole different level far beyond anything the president or Congress can do. It's about changing the culture and helping people live fulfilling lives, because we've changed the way everybody else views trans people and doesn't. And so then parents don't kick the kids out of the house, schools don't
absolutely
kick the kids out of school, and all that.
I completely agree with you on.
I know.
Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back. We've got more stuff to talk about, okay?
Okay.
All right. Okay. Hey, Mr. Mike, while we go, stick around. We got plenty more to talk about with Dana Buyer. We'll be back in a couple, gang. And we are talking to Dr. Dana Buyer. We're talking about Trans United for Obama. We're talking about the president. We're talking about the Democrats. And we're talking about this election that's coming up. And Dana, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is we've been talking about a lot of things that, you know, some of us aren't happy that didn't get done and things like that. What, in your opinion, and I guess in the opinion of Trans United for Obama, should we be pushing the president on?
Well, right now, Trans United for Obama's role is to get the president reelected. And it's my belief that once the president is reelected, for instance, the federal contractor order, the executive order that you mentioned that would cover gay and trans redundantly, the persons would go into effect. I would expect that would happen in late November, early December. So things like that are already in the pipeline. Bringing surgical care to you know, including it, encompassing it within trans health care, I think that will be huge. Having people educated within the system, within all the agencies, because passing a law, passing a regulation is one thing, implementing it is another.
Yes.
One of the most important things the EEOC has done is it's trained all its supervisors in its 53 offices. That's a huge step. It takes time. NCTE was involved with that. Not an easy thing to do. All of these things take time. The federal government is a huge bureaucracy. So each of these departments, we want the Department of Labor to bring the Macy decision fully under its purview, so it will then go out and do workplace audits on gender identity. We expect that they will do that in the second administration. These are all things that are in the pipeline. You're probably aware of that FAA regulation change.
Yes,
right?
We talked about that on the show a couple of weeks
ago. Right, so now trans pilots aren't subjected to all these bizarre psychological tests. That we've been working on that for years. A lot of these regulatory changes take a long time. Something else that has nothing to do with the Obama administration, per se, is the work that the task force and NCTE has done on driver's licenses, on coming up with a uniform procedure to help trans people change their driver's licenses. There's an organization called the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators. Must be a really exciting group, you know, to visit during their convention. But they have accepted guidelines written by our community in order to bring every state under the same umbrella in a single, simplistic way to change things. Roughly now, I think it's 20 states or so that follow these guidelines. They began in D.C. They've begun to spread around the country. I would expect that within the next 4 or 5 years, these will be common throughout the United States. These are huge practical advances for people in their lived reality, as I mentioned before.
But as we're learning with
voter ID law problems, if you don't have a driver's license which reflects who you are, how you're living, you've got a problem, not only with voting, but you have a problem with your own personal safety. So
Absolutely. These
are very important things, and this administration has created a cultural environment where bringing these issues to the fore is not something which gets at best a tenuous response. No, I don't want to do it. It's a little too icky and stuff. We have allies. in the federal government now that want to do this for us. Yeah. And that's a huge change.
I can tell you from personal experience, it took me about 5 years from the time that I legally changed my name and was officially, quote, considered a woman, to get the state of New Jersey to change my own driver's license. Now, I have, as I've mentioned on the show numerous times, I have not had surgery. Jumping through those hurdles was really quite hard, and it was expensive, and it involved, you know, multiple doctors and things like that. And I that's a huge step forward.
Uniform process would be great for everybody, because where you live or where you were born really should not be a determinative factor in how you can go ahead and live the rest of your life. And,
well, here's another thing I think we should be focusing on as a community is, for example, I was born in New York City. I have still not yet been able to get a birth certificate that reflects my lived gender, even though I've been living in this gender for 15 years.
But that's because you haven't had surgery.
Right.
That's what we talked about
before. And that's
before.
New York City.
I know. I was born in New York. I was born in New York. It took me a year and a half to get it done, but I've had surgery, so that wasn't an issue. But even with that, it still took a year and a half. But these bureaus of vital statistics are extremely ponderous bureaucracies, even when they're in cities and states. This is modern life. You know, there are 314 million people in this country.
But there's an interesting little tidbit about this, that the guy originally, the city of New York, and when they passed the trans rights law in 2002, they said to the New York City Department of Health, you need to change the way you do this in order to comply with the law. And at the time, the head of the New York City Health Department said, yeah, I'll take care of it. Well, 4 years later, they questioned him about it, said, how come you haven't? He said, well, we haven't gotten it done. That guy is now Obama's Secretary of Health. That guy, Thomas Friedman,
the president's secretary,
is now the guy who never bothered to get around to it, even though he was ordered to by law, by New York City law, just wasn't important for him enough to do it. And, of course, we still have no thing. He's now Obama's Secretary of Health.
No, he's not. He was at one point.
Excuse me. I apologize. You're right.
He may have some other job, but it doesn't matter. But what you're pointing to is the fact that, again, that's what I was talking about with respect to implementation. It really does matter who's there and the relationships we have with those people. Because no matter what the law says, or what a judge ultimately says the law says, which is what is determinative, it really matters that there are people there who care enough to make things happen. Because these are difficult rules and regulations to put in place, different workplace habits that have to be changed. Cultural change is very difficult. And if you don't have allies in the system, whether it's a local, state, or federal system, you're not going to get the changes that you want. And one person can make a huge difference. And I've seen that happen in Maryland. You know, one fundamentalist assistant attorney general, and suddenly there's a wrench in the system, and you got to work through it, and it takes time, and people, you know, get damaged a little bit in the process if they get caught in that as it's happening. So, you know, there's a lot that needs to be done, but I think probably other than the Macy decision, probably, and the healthcare changes, the most important thing that the Obama administration has done is it's changed the culture from day one. The Office of Personnel Management simply accepted trans people on an equal par with gay people and with everybody else. And that permeated the entire federal government. That's when the regulations went in, the gender identity was added to protections within the federal government. These are huge changes because they're being made by people who recognize our humanity.
I want to shift gears just a little bit, because what you say is one person can make a difference, and I completely agree with that. But we also saw, for example, when President Obama came out and said that he was okay with same-sex marriage as a concept, that he felt that it was okay for same-sex couples to get married. That had a huge cultural impact in certain quarters, particularly.
Right.
Okay. Do you feel, and I guess does TU4O feel, that the president should take a more active role, that he should, if he believes these things, if he supports these things, that he shouldn't be silent on them publicly, that he should say, hey, you know, hey, trans people, yes, just to remind you, I do support your civil rights. I do believe that ENDA should be, or whatever. I mean, ENDA is just one example. But that he should actually not only just simply declare his support, but be an active advocate as well.
Well, those are two different things. The president has publicly stated that he supports trans rights.
But so he hasn't spoken about it in like 3 years.
The question is, has he done enough behind the scenes to make it happen? I would say absolutely. I don't think the president has a problem with us whatsoever. You're simply inferring from certain things you've seen that he hasn't been working Congress, you know, strongly enough in order to get something like ENDA passed. That list that I've gone through is evidence that the president not only pays us lip service, but actually gets the work done. It's been a huge change. It's been a sea change, landmark, historic. I don't know where to end with those terms. And then on top of that, we're finally no longer a mental illness, too, which will then have its own huge changes as far as the culture goes, because you remember in 1973 when homosexuality was partially removed from the DSM, it propelled the gay rights movement forward. It changed the conversations around dinner tables and such. Gay people no longer went home and said, you know, I'm sorry that I'm mentally ill. They didn't have to do that anymore. We no longer have to do that either, for the most part. So all these changes will play out, and as our society accelerates, as cultural change accelerates, we'll probably move forward at an even more rapid pace. And the next generation, you know, you've seen what the next generation is like. You know, the kids and the adolescents and the kids in their 20s and such, they're in a completely different world.
Oh,
they
yeah.
They do everything very differently.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're making things happen. So
I have a little sister who's 18 years old. She does what's called cosplay, which is like, you know, she dresses up as comic book characters and things like that. And she dresses up as boy characters. And you know, she's lesbian. And, you know, and for her, these things are just like, so, and her friends, they're such non-issues. It's like, of course trans people are the same as we are. I mean, how could you ever think otherwise? You know,
that's right. Did you ever expect to live in an era like that? To me, the most remarkable change that I've witnessed is the way America, and I mean this, I find this shocking, because you can compare this to the way America has always dealt with gay folks and children. It's never been an easy thing. That's what the loss with Prop 8 was ascribed to, that, you know, the video of the girl coming home and saying, Mommy, I can marry a princess. Gay people and children has always been a politically fraught situation. But think back to all the programs, the Oprah and the Anderson Cooper and the Barbara Walters programs dealing with trans children and their families. And the support for those kids and their families, who are very, very human and honest and candid, and, you know, they put their struggles, they put their hearts out on the floor, but these kids who are happy in transition have made them, you know, just humanized. Welcome in America's living rooms. I never thought that I'd ever see that, because my childhood was nothing like that.
So of course, none was mine.
Right. No, I'm sure.
I mean, I think Chaz Bono did a lot for us on that score.
Yeah.
Because when he was on Dancing with the Stars, he forced people to pick sides.
Right.
He really did. And I think that we won that battle.
Well, to me, that's the most critical aspect of all of this. That's cultural change. People who are not, what Republicans would call elites, or just living on the coast and such, watch Dancing with the Stars. That is a huge cultural change moment. I was involved with a training for therapists in my county, which is a very blue county, mind you, outside of D.C., but there were 200 therapists in there wanting to learn about gender and transgender and genderqueer and how to deal with kids who are gender variant, all of those issues, 200 therapists. I mean, when I was 8 years old, there was nobody, even in New York, who was dealing with that other than Harry Benjamin. So, but to me, that's a sea change. That's huge.
Right, but I'll be honest with you. I don't credit that to Barack Obama or, frankly, any politician. I credit that to our own community coming out of the closet, stepping out from behind our computers and saying, here we are. I think that we deserve the credit for that more than any other factor.
Right? That's why there's the gay rights movement is where it is. That's why we are where we are. You've got to come out. You've got to make yourself known. There will be 12 of us in Charlotte next week at the Democratic National Convention, 12 of us out people, or 11 out, maybe one who's not so out, I'm not so sure. And there will be more in the future as more people come out, and just being out is not enough. That's where culture changes on the ground. The more people who come out and stay out and get active and become known as being out and trans, which I understand is not what everybody wants. I mean, I didn't transition to be an out trans person. I transitioned simply to be myself. And the younger folks are going to be doing it. They're going to transition, and then they're just going to leave it behind. That's, to me, the ultimate goal for people. I get that, but the more people that do come out, the more the culture changes. The more there will be people in all levels of government who will know somebody who has a family member who's trans. You hear this all the time. Even the Republican, Ileana Russ Lehtinen from Florida, she has a trans son. I mean, that makes a huge difference.
Okay, now I'm going to hit you with the big question. The question that I've been hearing debated all the time. In fact, I even wrote for the Huffington Post about this last week. And so I'm just going to hit you with this, and you could tell me what you think. Is the marriage movement, is the intensity with which the major organizations are focusing on marriage, for example, I got two mailings recently, one from the Human Rights Campaign and one from the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. The difference was the Human Rights Campaign had about 35 mentions of the Respect for Marriage Act or gay marriage versus two mentions of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. The task force had a two-page letter, never mentioned anything except marriage. What we're hearing from the major organizations these days is marriage, 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 marriage. Is that hurting the trans rights community and the, you know, our rights and the rights for people who, you know, care about, you know, putting food on the table and feeding ourselves and getting jobs and things like that? I mean, is all the money and the attention and the celebrity and the media coverage going in that direction? Is that hurting us politically?
There are several ways to look at this. I don't think it's hurting us politically. As I've mentioned, we've been talking here now for 50 minutes. We've made great strides with very little money, very little institutional support. The estimate is that of all the LGBT money every year that goes for nonprofits and advocacy and social services, only 2% of it goes to trans-specific issues. So we've never gotten a lot of it. So the fact that a little bit more of that money now goes to marriage rather than to other gay issues, I don't think is hurting us. I think the problem with marriage is that it sucks all the oxygen out of a room as far as activism goes, and each group, whether it's a state-level group or a national group, figures that if they don't get on board that bandwagon, they're not going to see any of that money. And more money from the donor community is going to marriage. And that's problematic. I think that one way or another, and I don't know how the Supreme Court's going to rule on any of these decisions, my sense is the California decision, the Perry v. Schwarzenegger decision, will be limited to California. So I think the marriage equality movement's going to have many more years ahead of it, and that's going to distort the entire movement for equality. There have been discussions. There was a discussion at Lavender Law on what is the future of the movement. I know some of us have talked about this, and we see the movement really changing significantly as we move forward because the gay community is going to be focusing almost solely on marriage, even though gender-conforming gay people still aren't covered under basic civil rights issues, too. But you don't hear from them because many of them don't have any money or they live in states where there just isn't much attention being paid to them. I don't know how they get traction. I don't know how they get people's attention. But it's a critical issue not just for our community, but it's for theirs as well. Because marriage is impacting basic gay civil rights as well as it is our civil rights.
Well, yeah, I mean, and in fact, there was just a study released that says that what they found, I think it was Logo TV that released this study, and they said that the issue that people really care, LGBTs really care about most, is employment and jobs. It got 14% who said that was their primary issue versus 6% who said marriage. But if you look at what's going on in D.C., if you look at what the major organizations are doing, you would never know that, because all they're talking about is marriage. And
right,
my question,
that's right. The reason that's happening is because the leaders in the community, the people who know how to do this stuff best, are most concerned with marriage. Granted, I mean, being married is important. I mean, I see marriage equality helping all of us, including the trans community, because it's an issue of human dignity, which was the motto for the campaign in Maryland, by the way, dignity. I think that's important. I think it humanizes all of us, because this is something that's very real to most Americans.
But it's also not going to be reality within our lifetimes. You know, I mean, come on. There are it might happen in New Jersey and California and Maryland.
And that
changes. But if you think it's happening in Alabama, you're kidding yourself.
No, not unless and until the Supreme Court, you know, rules on that. But the idea is enough states have to pass it before the Supreme Court will say, well, this is a movement whose time has come, and so therefore we will pass this. You know, Loving v. Virginia happened long before there would have been a majority in any southern state in support of interracial marriages, and there probably still isn't. So that's, you know, that's a non-issue. These are constitutional rights. I don't like it. I would really rather see a lot of the passion and the intensity go into issues other than marriage, but the people who are running the marriage campaigns are doing a really good job. They are attracting the big money. You know, the Olsen Boys team and such, Chad Griffin, who put that together and now runs HRC, that's where the big money is. Therefore, that's what gets done.
Given how many people, let's be honest, okay, EEOC or not, okay, trans people are still being fired from their jobs. They're still being thrown out of their homes. And the truth is according to what I've read, the EEOC currently has over 83,000 pending cases.
Doesn't matter.
It could be decades before they get around to us.
No, it can't be decades. The EEOC doesn't. There's a whole process through which all these things filter. Most of those cases get resolved long before they get adjudicated anywhere in that system. That's not the point of this. The point of laws is not so you can end up in court. The point of a law is so that you change the culture, so
yes,
that American employers, when they think about dealing with their employees, will say, well, I really can't discriminate against somebody on the basis of race, and I can't discriminate on the basis of sex, and now sex includes gender identity. I'm not going to go there. I don't want to risk a lawsuit. It's not worth it to me. That's where the change comes. That will help the lived reality of trans people. But trans people need to know what their rights are. I already know somebody here in Maryland who was being laid off by her law firm, and then the Macy decision came down, and she now had a tool, or a weapon, however you want to phrase it, to use with her employer to say, you need to settle with me, and a settlement is coming. That's how this needs to be used, which is why we need to educate our community that this tool is now at their disposal. They can change the world simply by using that, by knowing about it, and then learning how to wield that tool. It's incumbent upon us to educate, to train people, to train lawyers to know that they can do this. They need to change their employment HR manuals and stuff to add gender identity to this, gender expression, make sure people are clear about this. This is how change gets made. It takes time to percolate down. There's still going to be a lot of pain and a lot of disappointment. A lot of people are going to be suffering until this happens, but this is the way change happens in America. You just can't wave a magic wand.
But my question here is should we be challenging this popular idea that that marriage is the issue, like as Chad as Chad Griffin recently said, that marriage has become a mainstream value in America, which anybody who pays attention to knows is bullshit. because when you've got 31 states that have constitutionally banned something, that's not a mainstream value. It's living in fantasy land and taking the 50% who support this, who mainly live in the major urban areas where gay rights have already and trans rights have made major progress already, and trying to apply that to the country at large is not only bad statistical analysis, it's a lie.
Well, it's a messaging term. It's not a statistical, analysis that Chad's making on that. He's using this to bolster his argument. It's not a lie. It's spun.
Come on, it's bullshit.
Let me tell you this. Let's get specific. You want to change HRC and its approach to the world, then you need to get trans people on the board at HRC. You need to get trans employees at HRC.
Do you remember what happened the last time they had a trans person on the... I'm not even counting Megan Stabler because, quite frankly, and I know I take a little flack over this every time I say it, but that's okay. I think any woman who is willing to renounce her trans identity or identity as a woman to go get married in Texas, I have an issue with, and I don't necessarily consider, if you believe in your identity, if you truly have a trans identity, then you stand up for it. You don't just, throw it in the garbage the minute it becomes inconvenient. That's just my opinion. And
well,
we know what happened with Donna Rose.
But I'm saying this. If you want to have an – so you're asking how do we fight this or how do we change it? We start our own organizations. I started with Sharon Brackett, Gender Rights Maryland. We do everything we can in Maryland, and we reach out beyond it. We've got the Trans Law Center in San Francisco now that's expanding. NCTE, which has done most of this federal work, is superb. We do have organizations that are doing good work. We can support those. A little bit goes a long way for an organization like NCTE or TLC. There's no question about that. We need to do more of that. I have a job. I've been tasked with increasing trans representation on national boards. Believe me, it is not easy. We are only 2%, right? We're 8% of the LGBT community. We have only 2% representation on national boards. We're up to 8% on state, and we are 8% of the movement. So that's been accomplished for the most part. And you can see the difference in the way state equality organizations move forward compared to the national ones. We need to increase the number of trans people, not just at HRC, I just use that as an example, on these boards. They will then change the direction of the movement as best they can. But that's how you work from inside. If you want to create another organization, go right out there and do it. You never know what's going to work. After Prop H, Ed Griffin created AFER, and the next thing you knew, you had Olson and Boys, and you had plays about Prop 8, and now we're in the Supreme Court. So you never know. People need to get out and make change. And there are good organizations all over the country, very small ones in the trans community, that are doing work like this. We need to support them and change the culture quietly, under the radar, because we don't have that messaging muscle that the marriage equality people do. That's
okay.
Just the reality.
Okay. Now, last question, Dana. Tell people how, if they want to get involved with Trans United for Obama, how they get involved and what they can get involved with.
Well, just as I mentioned before, go to the webpage, transunitedforobama.org, and click on Get Involved. And you can sign up for emails. You can volunteer. We've got groups all over the country that are doing this. You can donate. And you can even use other of your local organizations. Get them involved. As I mentioned earlier, I am asking my gay friends who are going to contribute to the Obama campaign, give it through Trans United for Obama. It'll have more of an impact. The money will still get to the Obama for America people, but it'll have a sticker that says trans approved on it, and that will raise our credibility within the party. They'll take us more seriously. We'll end up getting more. This is how the political game is played. We may not like it in this post-Citizens United world. Life is much more difficult, but this is the best we can do. We can have a huge presence out there. We've been in pride parades and such. Get out and do that. If you like to volunteer, if you like to knock on doors, if you like to make phone calls, all that can be done. If you just want to make a contribution, whatever you can do, that will be welcome too. But this will be tagged as trans, as part of the LGBT community's donations. And the LGBT community, the gay community in particular, is a major donor to the Democratic Party. It gets noticed. This stuff okay. has been noticed by the DNC. It's not a trivial issue.
Okay, one quick last question. One thing I wanted to ask you is I know that when we were doing Out for Democracy, Out for Dean, we were really Out for Democracy and Out for Dean were really their own organizations, separate and completely apart from the Kerry campaign and from the Dean campaign.
Right, right.
How closely connected is Trans United for Obama with the Obama campaign and with the DNC? Are there strong ties there, or is it really a separate organization?
Oh, it's definitely a separate organization, but many of us who are on the executive committee and such have strong ties with the administration and with the Democratic Party.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
Many of us who are on that executive committee will be in Charlotte this coming week because we're delegates and committee members. So those connections exist, and those are all synergistic. See, this is all one big network, and when I go and do something in the convention, I'm not just doing it, you know, as a party member. I'm doing it as a trans activist. I'm doing it as a gay activist. I'm doing it as a woman activist. I'm doing it as a Jewish activist. All these things get connected, and, you know, we all get out. But this is a separate organization. It's not an arm of the party, per se.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I hope you or somebody else from Trans United for Obama, after Charlotte, will come back and you know, talk to us about how that went, how well the organization and its members were, and our issues, of course, were received at the convention, and what the feeling was. You know, are there people who are excited and interested in pushing these issues or not? You know,
you do know that we are fully included in the platform.
Yes,
It was a fight in 2008. It wasn't a fight this year. This year, the fight was on marriage equality.
But we also know that the platform means not much.
Right,
you know, and it was in the platform
in
2008. Even Barney Frank in a HuffPo article said bluntly that the platform means nothing. I mean, he said it himself.
I'm not going to argue. You mentioned Charlotte. That's how policy gets talked about in Charlotte. It's a matter now of engaging with people who can make things happen. And, I mean, I see my role as thanking people like Secretary Sebelius or Secretary Clinton for the work they do and encouraging them to do more. And we move forward that way. That's, you know, when you get people together in a convention, there are no surprises anymore. It's a matter of networking, getting to know folks when you have the time to sit down and talk with them and make things happen as you go forward. And the more people who do this, and they do it in their home districts with their congresspeople and even state, you know, representatives, that's how change happens.
Absolutely.
As you said it, the more people that come out, the easier it is to pass this legislation. The more legislators know actual living, breathing trans people, the easier it is to get things done. You know, it's not a mystery. And people then aren't influenced by all these scare stories because they know individuals. And as Dick Cheney said, that great, you know, LGBT leader, freedom means freedom for all.
Yeah, absolutely. I quoted him a few times on that and on this show.
And we live in a world now where Judge William Pryor is a leader for trans equality. So go figure.
Yeah.
You know,
and Brian Sandoval, the Republican governor of Nevada as well.
Yeah. So, you know, the world changes, but people have made that happen. That just doesn't happen in a vacuum. These people don't wake up one day and say, I need a new cause, and I'm going to go 180 degrees from where I was, and I'll pick this. This is unusual, transgender. I'll support this. I don't know anything about it, but I'll support it. There are connections that have been made. People have been working with these people in their cultural sphere, and they've made changes. So a lot of it happened slowly. You know, the civil rights movement took 100 years before it came to fruition after slavery ended. The things don't happen quickly, but they sometimes pop up and they appear to have happened suddenly, but they never did. So
absolutely. All right. Well, Dana, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. This was great. It's always great having you on. We always have a good time. We always have a good conversation. You and I always have a really spirited discussion. I really enjoy that. And I appreciate and respect you coming on. And, you know, you're willing to challenge me and stuff. And I appreciate that because
it's my pleasure. That's the way I like doing it.
All right. Anyway, and I hope, like I said, I hope you'll, if you have time, you or somebody else from the organization will come on after Charlotte and let us know, you know, what happened down there and what kind of progress we're making with the Democratic Party rank and file in getting our issues out into the forefront and actually getting not just them on print, but real people excited about working on them. Because
right.
I think that's a key component.
I fully agree. That's an important
thing. All right. And we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. That was Dr. Dana Byer from TransUnited for Obama. You know, I always love talking to her because she's so good. And I really enjoy having those kind of conversations because she's willing to challenge me. And you know, if I say something wrong, she's willing to correct me, which is fine because, you know, believe me, I am not flawless. But it is well overdue. We are well overdue for a break. So we are going to take one right now. And I think Mr. Mike has some lovely music ahead. And we will catch you in a couple, gang.
Epilepsy is dancing, she's a Christ now departing, and I'm finding my rhythm as I twist in the snow.
The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is
Q1.
We'll be back in just a minute. Yes, Becky has a pretty mouth.
I've got Mr. Obama sitting here, and he's, I just was going to ask him a couple questions. What? What do you want me to tell Romney? I can't tell him to do that. That can't do that to himself. You're getting as bad as Biden. When somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go. I'll start it, you finish it. Go ahead.
Now from Rebecca Juro Show headquarters in New Jersey, here's Becky.
Hey, all right, we are back, and thanks for sticking around. We just finished up a great interview with Dr. Dana Byer, talking about Obama, talking about the campaign, talking about... Well, you know, the reasons why we should be supporting this guy. And I want to talk a little bit about this, you know, because most of the time we were spending over the last hour, we were talking, letting Dana make her case. And, you know, I challenged her a bit. She challenged me. But, I, you know, here's the thing. And I said a little bit of this at the top of the show, but I want to reiterate, you know, I think, my opinion, Barack Obama... I'll take, you know, forget about everything else for a minute. If I have a choice between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, there is no choice there. There is no choice. You know, and it's funny, too, because, you know, I find myself, as I mentioned during the interview, I find myself torn. Because on the one hand, I say to myself, well, you know, if you want civil rights, if you want to even have a hope of being treated decently, the only way to go is Barack Obama. On the other hand, if we say to the Obama campaign, don't worry, we've got your back, well, then where's the incentive for the Democratic Party, for the Obama administration, to get proactive on our issues? You know, and I respect Dana's opinion a lot. Okay, she's incredibly smart. She's, you know, former candidate for delegate in Maryland. She's got the political chops as good as anybody I know. Okay, and so I'm, you know, I respect her opinion a lot, but I'm also concerned about, as I said during the interview, about hanging our hats on an EEOC decision. That right up until now, we have no way of knowing how this is going to play out in the courts. You know, right now, this is still brand new. We just heard, for example, I mean, the hate crimes law passed in 2009. I just read an article today. I wish I could find it. I tried to find it so I could send it to Mr. Mike so he could put it on the board for us to talk about. But I found it, I saw it, and then I couldn't find it again. But it mentioned something that I thought was really interesting, that there was this, apparently there was this discrimination, a hate crime that was committed, and the guy apparently confessed. And it'll only be, now bear in mind, the hate crimes bill was passed in 2009. And here we are, 3 years later, only the second case to be prosecuted under the federal hate crimes law is going to be this case. Okay, so this law has been on the books for 3 years. And it's only the second time that it's going to be used. Now, I have to wonder, how long is it going to take before this EEOC decision has an impact? And what do we do in the meantime? I mean, trans people are still getting fired. Trans people are still getting passed over for promotions. Trans people are still getting excluded from jobs. They're still not being rented to. They're still being thrown out of their homes. All these things, you know, and just because there was a decision by the EEOC, okay, we also have to remember that, and this is yet another reason to vote for Barack Obama. We have to remember that if Romney takes over, if the Republicans take charge, that decision may go away very quickly, along with Commissioner Faldblum and anything else that's positive for us. Okay, and that's part of the problem, I think, is, you know, when you have a government agency that is essentially controlled from the top down by the administration, by the president, well, look what happened to all the pro-gay things that Clinton did when George Bush took over. Poof, gone. Like they were never there. Vapor. Right? Okay, well, it's not so easy to get rid of a legislated passed law, which is why I think we still need the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. I am not as confident as Dana is that now that we have this, everything's okay, we're covered, don't worry about it. Well, yeah, but what if we have President Romney in a year, and he decides, well, you know, I don't like that decision, so I'm going to just fire commissioners I don't like and replace them with people who, you know, who I agree with. And those people maybe rescind that decision. Okay? Don't think it can't happen. It has happened. Okay? You know how many benefits and various things that the Bush administration rolled back when they took over? Okay, now this is yet another reason to vote for Barack Obama. And I am saying to you now, I am telling you, if my opinion means anything to you, vote for Barack Obama. Okay, I am telling you this from my heart. I'm going to be voting for Barack Obama. No, nothing I say should be construed. Okay, I criticize Obama. I think there are things he deserves to be criticized on. I don't think he's fought hard enough on certain things. I think he has failed to lead in a lot of cases. That, as Dana said, he gets credit for working behind the scenes. But you know what? He's president of the United States. He needs to work in front of the scenes, too. He needs to be able to not only stand up for us behind closed doors, but he needs to stand up for us in front of those video cameras, too. I'm sorry. I think that's part of what a real advocate does. And if you're any kind of politician, if you're any kind of leader, then you're an advocate. You stand up for what you believe in. I think it's part of it. I'm sorry. Maybe it's the activist in me that says, you know, maybe that's because maybe I'm having trouble separating. But I believe if you are what you are as a politician, when you run for political office, you're saying, I am going to be a professional activist on behalf of the people who elected me to promote what they want. That's what a leader is. And that's the difference between a politician and a leader. And I think Obama has been a great leader on a lot of things. I think his foreign policy has been light years above anything that the Republicans have delivered over the last ever, pretty much. It's in my lifetime, anyway. I think you have to be able to... You have to be able to say, get out in front of this, Mr. President. If you can come out and support gay marriage with 31 states already having rewritten their constitutions to prevent it, if you can find the political courage to get out in front of that issue, then you can certainly find the political courage to get out in front of an issue where double the amount of states have already protected it, where the EEOC has already ruled. I mean, this should be a no-brainer for this guy. This should be an easy one. Because here's the thing, and I'll say this publicly. I've said it privately to people, but I'll say it publicly now. If you want trans people to fight for Barack Obama, you got to give trans people something to fight for. You got to be able to finish the sentence, support Barack Obama because. Barack Obama is the right choice for you because. And you know what? I think Enda is, Dana seems to think that, well, we've got the EEOC decision, so Enda is now irrelevant. I don't think so. Again, I think that the added protection of a legislated law, I think that makes more sense because it's harder to get rid of a law that protects people from discrimination that has been passed into law and would have to be repealed versus something like, this EEOC decision, which, if the next president decides he doesn't like it or she doesn't like it, you just fire the people that made it and search your own people, stock the courts with your own ideologues like Bush did. And guess what? It's as if it never happened. Poof, vapor. Just like Bush did with all those Clinton things. I think that if we just assume that, okay, the EEOC has ruled, so we're okay now, we're good. I think we're setting ourselves up for disaster and extreme disappointment when and if we lose this election or any other ensuing election and all these things suddenly go away. Because right now, it's dependent on the goodwill of the President of the United States. Well, we have that. But that's not the same. Having a ruling that exists as long as the president tolerates it is not the same as having a law. It just isn't. Okay? The EEOC has issued an opinion that we're covered under sex discrimination, and that's great. But it's an opinion. Don't forget, there are a lot of Bush appointees on the bench. And any one of them can turn around and say, I don't find that this is true. And they can challenge it. And then you go into a whole bunch of other procedures. Okay, now, you may not have a problem if you live in New Jersey or California. But what if you live in Alabama and you have to go face an Alabama judge? You think he's going to be willing to just accept the EEOC ruling at face value? I don't. I think anyone who does is living in fantasy land. I don't think it's that easy. And that's not to say that it won't. But the thing is I think that the problem is that the EEOC ruling is dependent on the goodwill of the administration and power. Because they're the ones who control these people. I mean, look at how many members of the Justice Department, the Bush administration was picking and choosing, making sure they had the right ideological bent, firing people because they were too liberal. Okay, if you think it can't happen again, you're kidding yourself. Okay, I'm willing to bet you dollars to donuts. Well, isn't that an old saw? I'd be willing to bet you that one of the first things Mitt Romney would do if he became president would be to start firing people like Kai Feldblum and probably Amanda Simpson, just to be mean and to pander to his base, and any other people who have come out, John Berry, the director of personnel, who's a gay, openly gay man, you know, people like that. I have no problem believing that the first thing that Romney would do would be to purge the federal government as much as he was possible of LGBT people in power, of people who had any level of power whatsoever, like Commissioner Feldblum, okay, like, you know, like any of these people. I have no trouble believing that that would be the case, okay, just because he's an ideologue, okay? The problem with Obama, in my opinion, is that he campaigns like a progressive and he governs like a Democrat. And you know what? I think we deserve better. I mean, I think if President Obama is truly a progressive, he needs to show that. He needs to stand up for it. He needs not to shy away from it. He needs to stand up and say, yes, this is who I am, and this is what I believe. Because if you can't do that, what the hell are you doing running for president? Honestly. I mean, and like I said, I believe that President Obama is a good guy. I do believe he supports our equality. I do believe that he is the person you should be voting for in November. But that doesn't mean that I think he's the perfect president. That doesn't mean that I don't think that he needs to do more. That you can't just say one day, okay, yeah, I support you. Now I'm never going to mention you again. And anything I do or say in regards to you or your civil rights is going to be done behind closed doors. I'm sorry. I think we deserve better than that. I think America deserves better than that. I think that we, as a community and as individuals, have to call him out and say, yes, I support you, but not good enough. I want you want me to go out of my way to do proactive things to support you. And that's fine. But I want the same from you. I don't think that there's anything wrong with saying we deserve the kind of attention that people, when you say, if Congress doesn't act, I will. Well, you know what? That means us too. All right. Looks like we are just about out of time. I want to say thanks to, as always, the amazing Mr. Mike Scott, Dr. Dana Beyer for joining us and getting into it with us. We will, who knows who we're going to have on next week. Stick around. If you didn't hear the interview, if you didn't catch the whole show, it will be repeating in about 5 minutes. So stick around for that. We will catch you next week, and we'll catch you next week. Have a good night, everybody.
Show the people!